stop, drop, and listen. I'm Magda, and you've just arrived at your final destination. If it's raw, real, and unedited, I like it. Live, from the bottom of my heart, this podcast is everything you've never expected. I'm going to sign my name across the airwaves by daring to be different. Muchos arigatos. The secret to my weight loss goes in three parts. One of those parts is what I ate every day, what I eat every day, what I swear by. It's Verda. It comes in three flavors: chocolate, vanilla, berry. Where do you buy it? My website, www.atreve-tisandtom.com. I've been eating this every day for 3 years. It changed my body. It changed my life. Verda, a variation for the word green. In Spanish, it's verde. In French, it's verde. In my language, it's weight loss.
Wave Radio. Every Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. on clangbox.fm. With Kat Hayen and Amy Damheim.
And we are on.
We made it.
I'm driving today.
Kat's so running the show.
You guys are going to have to bear with me here.
You got it.
She's a pro.
Kat's in the driver's seat. We were just talking about this powerful goddess energy happening in Miami. Yeah. And it's like,
it's really hot in here now.
Here in action.
Two goddesses just got in here.
So we've got two awesome guests with us today.
We got Vanessa Scotto in the house.
What's up, Clangbox? I'm so happy to be back.
And we've also got
a goddess. My name is Magda. Thank you for having me, Kat, Amy, Vanessa.
We love this. So we're playing musical microphones because we have four people, three mics. So
musical chairs, musical microphones. It's all good.
It's a day. What a chilly day, huh?
Oh my God, I'm freezing. I wore a scarf, a jacket, and a sweater. You'd think like I wasn't from New York or something. I can't even adjust.
I taught a 7 a.m. yoga class this morning, and I had on tank top, long sleeve, vest, jacket, gloves, socks. It was like 50 degrees out. Oh, because I rode my bike. So
for you, it was like 40 degrees.
It was chilly. But I like it. It's fun. It makes it feel like the holidays. Yeah, that's a good move, Magda. Thank you.
You know what the problem is with winter in Miami? Is I have all this winter clothes and I go into my closet and I'm lost. I don't know how to layer. You forget how to layer.
Yeah, where do you start?
I don't, well, my underwear.
Well, Vanessa's from New York. Though, so. Any insight?
No, I think living in San Francisco is the best practice for layering, right? Because you start to go, okay, it could get hot when the sun is out. Same here, right? The sun's out, I start to sweat. So you got to go like bra, obviously, t-shirt, light sweater, scarf, and then light jacket. And then you keep stripping. And then adding and stripping.
Stripping.
And am I the only one?
I think you also, that also requires like a big bag to hold all your.
You have to be portable, right?
I think you need a suitcase for all of that. I don't wear a bra. I don't need a bra. Mine are real fake. I'm from Canada, so the way I keep warm is by eating sweet potato and healthy carbs. So this is just a tickle, really. But on a bike, I can understand that.
It was chilly.
You're right. That's actually a really good way to put it. It's a tickle.
It is.
It is.
It's a little coqui in Spanish. A little coqui. It's fun.
A little coqui.
What is coqui?
It's short form for coquilla, which is a little tickle.
A little tickle.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
A little tickle. So we're so excited to have you guys on. Vanessa's been here before, but this is Magna's first time in
Clang Box with two yoginis.
Yeah.
Talking about goal crushing, and I'm honored and thank you both. Goal crushing is important, especially this month, because people start really freaking out, tying loose ends, starting new wonderful beginnings. they get nervous, they get stressed, and I think it's a good time to talk about goal crushing. One of the things I like to do, just like I do when I'm at a gym, is go one at a time. It's a domino effect. It does not fail. You attack until you accomplish that goal, and then you go to the next one. And that's what life coaches do. What do you think, Vanessa?
I love this.
Yeah, I tend to have such an abstract approach because usually I think a lot of the work that I do starts to look at why someone's not following through with the steps that they set to reach their goal. Because, of course, statistically, Magda's absolutely on. If you set, you know, they say if you set two goals, like two behavioral changes for yourself in a week, you're almost 100% likely to fail. Whereas if you set one, something that's very effective, kind of a goal, then your odds of succeeding are really good because you feel good. So it is right. But I'm usually looking at like, okay, you know you should meditate 10 minutes a day, or you know you should go do yoga, or you know you should work out, or whatever it is. And why isn't that happening? That seems to be my sweet spot.
It's interesting that you say meditation and workout and stuff, because even that, even learning how to meditate and committing to meditation or a workout is a goal for a lot mm-hmm. of people. And I think the embodiment of your body health helps you accomplish goals. And I think if meditation and working out is a goal, then that's definitely the first one you have to attack to move on to professional, personal, etc. Today, I was listening to some clues from my body because I was so excited to be here with you guys. And I was trying to feel the sensations that were not mine, that were different and new. And my heartbeat and just my demeanor, I was so excited, and I listened and I worked out extra hard so I could accomplish today's goal, which is being with you.
See, that's what we were talking about this week when Magda and I did an event at Athleta on Sunday. Kat was there.
I was there.
I was
dancing and shaking and grooving.
Yeah, as we like danced around the whole store, and we were talking about goal crushing, but we were coming at it from that angle of embodiment. And I think it's a cool thing when you look at people who really seem to excel, like leaders in their field. Almost all of them have a physical practice, they have a mental practice, they have a ritual. And one of the things I noticed, and you all can tell me what you think, is that sometimes I think as humans, we think that motivation should be easy, that inspiration should be easy, that I should just be the kind of person who wakes up and feels creative and feels on and kind of courageous and ready to go for it. And I think it's a little more like we have to kind of prime that pump. We have to engage in practices and hang out with people like these ladies that actually kind of create that energy. And then that energy feeds the behavior and feeds the thoughts. I don't know. What do you all think?
I actually, before we get into in-depth into everything, because you guys keep talking about goal coaching and life coaching. What is the difference between life coach, being a life coach, and a goal coach, or are those two together?
Want to go first?
I mean, in my opinion, it's the funny thing about the term life coach is that you don't have to be licensed in this profession. It's a certified profession, but you don't require a certification. And you will find, just like everything, just like personal trainers, just like psychologists, you'll find different styles within it. So people can come at it from all sorts of different directions. But in my experience, generally speaking, a life coach does tend to look at one's goals. That's almost like part of the defining quality. So that, let's say I studied, I have my master's in counseling psychology, so I studied to be a therapist. I practiced as a therapist. And I would say that some of the difference, in therapy you might have goals, but they might be like to heal the pain from your past so it doesn't keep showing up in your relationship. In life coaching, I tend to work with a little more concrete, tangible goals so that people are feeling what's happening in the present, looking at where they want to be in the future, and then trying to understand how to get there, how they may be holding themselves back, how to overcome their own barriers, and even sometimes how to logistically break it down into executable steps. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. We did a little bit of that on Saturday at Athleta. Yeah, it was really cool.
It was Sunday, ladies.
Sunday. Oh, I'm off.
Dimanche. Domingo. I think life coaching, what you said is bang on. Life coaching is more about accountability, Kat, is being able to talk to someone that's not going to judge you, that's going to be a sounding board for your ideas, your goals, where you're at. And that person can coach you for a goal, can coach you for family success, can coach you for professional or body health success, but it's more about holding the coachee accountable, making sure that that person every week or every Monday gets to that place to eventually accomplish or destroy the obstacles holding them back. That's how I see life coaching. And I am certified as a master life coach. I'm also part of the ICF, and I think certification is very important in our field because, yeah, certification is important, I think.
How do you become certified?
Well, there's different programs, different schools, different master's programs that allow you to coach people. But the first thing I would suggest to anyone is to make sure there are certifications and accreditations and licenses because, you know, it's your future, it's your life, it's your goals. You want to make sure that you're with the right person, the right fit.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't go the certification pathway because I got my master's in counseling psychology.
That's enough certification, yeah. I think.
And prior I had done an apprenticeship. But I think what's interesting is people often say to me, I have a successful business. And it's a hard thing apparently to have a successful business as an entrepreneur in general, but certainly as a life coach, because there are a lot of life coaches out there. And so, you know, when they say to me, like, how are you doing that? And I slow down and I reflect, I say, you know what? Because I was well trained. I actually have really good training, so I am good at what I do, and I think that's the key to a good business.
Well, it speaks for itself because you're going to get clients just because you're good, but more than that, Vanessa, I think you're much more than just a coach. You have to be a good business person, yeah. Manager, salesperson, accountant, marketer. You've got to be everything to be an entrepreneur. So, yeah, first you got to be good at your craft, like both of you. You have a following, but you have to be able to manage your business. So, It's you're like a whole office in one.
Everyone in this room probably relates to that, right? Like, I thought I want to teach an emotional resiliency class for entrepreneurs because it's
they
not
need
what
it.
You think it
they
is.
Need
right?
it.
Look at Amy's face.
I love her face. You have to manage
her
so
face
much
says it
anxiety.
All.
It goes up, it goes down, people come, people go. Yeah, you're right. You're like a full spectrum kind of business person. It's just that I think becoming excellent is an important thing we should attend to. Because that's like a really good foundation point for our business, right? Like, that's what we all try to do, I imagine.
Yeah. I feel like we actually...
Amy is in her element.
So I feel like we actually just did... Do you ever watch Jeopardy? And they go through like the first round and then they introduce the contestants. Like, I feel like that's where we are right now. So to give you guys context of who we have in the house speaking right now, I'd love for you guys to just give a brief overview of who you are and what you do.
You know, this question was asked to me at Soho House on Art Basel night. What do you do for a living? And I looked at him and I was like, you don't really want to hear it. And because it's such a long description, I'm going to say I'm Magda. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a mom. And I'm just willing to learn and grow every day. I own a marketing firm. I own an accounting firm. I'm a life coach. I'm a spin teacher. I'm a personal trainer. I'm a keep going.
Well,
badass
podcaster.
social media magnet. Yeah, I have a podcast on iTunes, but what I'd like to be known for really is I'm a mom and I'm Magda.
And she's an amazing mom. So
thank you, Kat. Kat has a relationship with my son. They're tight.
Yeah.
I have to say personally that I never really liked the term life coach. And I don't know, it's a hard thing to resonate with. And I think it's because what you do is, you know, what I do with people is you show up in the room with them. You just really, really show up in the room with them. You're very present. You listen through your ears. You listen through your intuition. You feel the person. You hear their story. You feel their blocks. And you start to look for, well, what's holding them back? Like, what are the beliefs that are holding them back? What are the habits, the patterns, the people in their lives? You know, where do they want to be? What's their potential? You know, what would make them shine? And you're just kind of being really present and you're hearing all of that. And then the two of you, you and the client, start to co-create experiments. You play. You're like, try this meditation, do that, see what happens, push that edge. And then eventually, like, you're in a very real relationship. I mean, for me with my clients, I'm not like a typical therapist and maybe not like other life coaches. Like, my clients talk to me and they email me in between sessions. And because I think you form a very real bond where it's just two people committed to evolution, committed to being honest, and then you figure it out.
I think what she says is very important. Active listening is really, I'm an active listener is your the answer to, we both are. Listening and hearing, it's an art. It's an art. Asking the right questions is an art. You have to study. You have to study to do it. You have to really want to do it. What she says about forming that relationship and the team against the goal, the issue, the problem, it's the coach and the client against the world, really, to accomplish this. But active listening is probably the key role that we both perform daily.
And then I'm like a meditation geek and a spiritual geek, and I'm usually trying to get into what someone might find the larger sense. Like, do they find meaning in their life? Do they feel connected to who they really are? And then kind of training you, because it's nice. Like, we all can set goals. Like, many of us might set a goal. Let's talk about entrepreneurialism. Like, I'm not going to be anxious when my income fluctuates. And that's a beautiful goal. But you also really need tools, because we only know how to show up how we know how to show up. Whatever we were taught. And so I think, I'm sure you guys as yoga teachers do the same thing as we do as life coaches. It's like we try to give people tools so that they can have a new experience of themselves and their life. And I just tend to go towards Buddhism and Eastern philosophy and meditation a lot.
She's the yin and I'm the yang. I'm not
yeah,
a
they're a really good combination.
I'm definitely not. As a matter of fact, we're talking about goals, and one of my goals is to adopt some of her techniques, because I'm the yang. I'm more like, let's work it out. Let's punch it out. Let's beat it up.
And Vanessa's like, let's massage it out.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting, right? The approach. And yeah, identifying the beliefs of the client, the coachee, is probably one of the hardest parts, because sometimes they're not their own beliefs. And that's usually what's holding them back sometimes, is that they're adopting their parents or their husband or their wives or whatever beliefs and living by those instead of their own. So,
and I think one of the things that makes you guys masters of your craft is that we all have different beliefs, but different ways of communication, because what's hot to me is not hot to you. So you're literally becoming a conduit of what this person is feeling and how to help them achieve what they don't know they want. And so that's such a task. I mean, that's huge. And I give you guys like,
I tell you a little secret, Kat. just a little secret. Kat, for me, and taking her classes over the years, is one of the people that I think about a lot when I'm coaching.
I'm going to cry.
It's,
I really am.
The way she understands her clients and their bodies and their movements is something that I try to channel, because you have to really, that intuition is really your soul and you're trusting it. And yeah, I aspire to be like you one day.
I want to be like all of you guys when I grow up.
I haven't gone to your class, but Darren tells me you're the bomb. I can't wait. And giving presents, Mac Daddy right here. Did you see her on
She's
the commercial?
Amazing.
Did you see her on? She was beautiful.
Yeah.
She was beautiful.
We'll share it. We'll share it on the project when I'm at. Yeah.
Thank you.
Plus she's hot. So
she is hot.
Thank you. I want to go back. Actually, Magda, it was funny. I love that you self-identified as Yang, because when I heard you speak and you were like, yeah, it's me and the client against the world, I was like, what about being with the world? Like, how about you work with it? I'm such a yogi.
Amy.
But that's actually something that comes up for a lot of yogis, is like yogis struggle to set goals. It doesn't feel intuitive. And that's something, Vanessa, I wanted to hear your perspective on too, because how does it fit in with Buddhism? You know, like a lot of these philosophies are like plant the seeds and let things come. And setting goals is very yang and very active. And yeah, I'd love to get your take on it.
I have plenty of opinions on it. So. No, I actually think it's a really good thing, because I think we can fall into a trap on either side of the extreme, right? It's like anything. And the Buddhist stance on it, which I actually think is really useful, is that you are welcome to set any goal in life. In fact, desire is not bad. We wouldn't get out of bed with it. We wouldn't do a kind thing without it. We wouldn't meditate without desire. We wouldn't do yoga without desire. What really kind of creates most chaos for us is the feeling that we have to have it or else. The feeling that our whole identity depends on it, the feeling that our happiness depends on it. So the kind of Buddhist answer is that we're welcome to set goals because that's fun and that's human and that's natural, because really the happiest people they find pay attention to the present, but they also attend to the future. Because everything we do now is planting the seeds for the future. And that's huge in Buddhism. That's karma. What I do today, what I think today, what I say today, plants a seed in my consciousness, which colors what I see tomorrow, right? And so they're very big on you being aware that you're creating your future and setting a goal to have a happy, healthy, harmonious, enlightened one, if possible, right? So I kind of like look and I look at the Dalai Lama and like that dude is setting goals like fucking crazy. Like he's running a country and he's really future thinking. The thing for us is what happens when we set a goal? I want to lose weight. I want to get a job. I want to make this amount of money. And it doesn't happen. You know, what do we do then? So I actually think the goal setting is not the problem. It's the way that we engage with the goal that can become out of balance.
Do you think there's a way to ask the universe for that goal? Because, you know, one thing that I've, and we talked about it on Sunday, is I've been doing a lot of writing and it's been like this, it's been miraculous. And I should have been doing this probably like 10 years ago. So are there ways and forms to ask?
There's ways, and visualization by writing it is a great way. You know, you can do your affirmations throughout your house. You can even tape record and listen to on a nightly basis or daily, even in your car or on Magda Lopez podcast, things that you would like to accomplish. But, you know, on the failure part of goal meeting, I'm more like the Rocky Balboa type. Dalai Lama is a very cool dude. Did he really say that, though, throughout Instagram? I mean, that guy gets credit for saying that all the time. And I don't know if he really said that. You know what I mean? But that if you go through Instagram or social media, the Dalai says so many things that we don't know if he really said. But I know Rocky Balboa says crush it and punch it in the face. There is no way that we fail if we keep trying. There is no way. I'm more like Tony Robbins. Just own it. Just keep going at it until you accomplish it. I quit smoking in 3 hours after 21 years. How did I do it? I just kept trying, and I did. How do you make it to a gym? You just show up, and you do. How do you accomplish a goal? You just do it. That's my approach. There is failure. Of course, there's failure, and then you deal with failure. But you don't stop. You keep trying, and eventually you will. My philosophy is there is no room for failure. And I think that method of coaching brings a certain client to me. And together with my clients, I've been able to see them get to the top of the mountain. And I swear it's happening to me. And so the word failure, there's no room in my life for that.
I think it's right. I think, though, you can get into some more interesting nuance around it. Because, like, let's say this is not uncommon if you do vision boards or anything like this.
I love vision boards.
Right. A woman might say, for example, I'm just giving an example. By the end of 2014, I want to have the love of my life.
Oh, that's a different podcast show altogether.
Right. So she may say that right now. She's trying. Maybe she's dating. And maybe that's just not what happens with life. Maybe those variables don't come to exist. And then the question is, what happens to you when that happens? How do you take that?
You know, Vanessa, I do get clients like that. And I say to them, that you can't control. What can you control? And that's yourself. You can't control that guy or that girl. What do you own? You own yourself. So I always tell my clients, love yourself, and then him or her. Well, it's funny because mine at home, my microphone's always right here, and I hold it like that. The word failure, though, I just hate hearing anyone say failure. But the issue about other people or things, intangibles, out of your control, I always say, that's not your issue. You're your issue. You're your obstacle. You're in your way. And that, I think, has been key to the success to date of my clients and their betterment and their goal crushing. Even for myself, I can only control myself and hope that the universe and all of my visualization and all of my manifestations and all of my affirmations work. You know.
I think it's super interesting because there is something to it. You know, oftentimes I realize like, oh, I could accomplish any goal I want. However, I have to want to put that effort in too. And I think that's where it comes from, right? Like, I can make $1 million a year. Do I want to work as hard as might be required for me to
New York is coming out.
That may not be the case. And so I think that first, what's really cool about what you're saying is that it does require you showing up. Like, you know, you're really showing up. You're putting that effort in. As to visualizations, I think this is where it's something, it's very Buddhist of me. And I think it's because this is some of the medicine I'm meant to bring. I think sometimes I don't believe in just the straightforward manifestation in the way that like The Secret may talk about it, like visualize it and it will come. I think sometimes we need lessons we don't want. I think sometimes we don't know what will make us happy. We have misconceptions. Like if you get that, it may not be, and maybe there's something else for you. So I think there's a lot, even if we're going to bring the word universe to like what the universe has in store. If we are really going to manifest something, I think we do it by embodying it. That's where I think, like, I've had Buddhist teachers, I've had Christian ministers, I've had Hawaiian shamans all say the same thing. You want to create something, you visualize it, and then you experience it on a body level like it happened. You feel grateful, you feel excited.
When you were saying that on Sunday, you taste it, you feel
yes.
it, like you feel the heat. So this is super exciting. I'm loving all of this and I'm under your spell. So actually this tune is for you guys. So, it's Under Your Spell by Desire by my favorite, soundtrack. Drive. Here you go. are back.
Ow!
Woo! All right, it's pretty smooth. It's gonna get a little, it's gonna get a little choppy here later.
Working the board.
So that was Under Your Spell, Desire. Such a hot song.
I
hot
love that song
for the hotties here.
You play that song a lot?
I do. And it's my movie. I love that movie.
What movie Drive. Is it? Oh, Drive.
Yeah, it makes me think of
driving.
Makes me think of Ryan.
Oh. Another excellent one.
Exactly. So we're, you know, still talking about goal crushing and what have you. And one of the questions that I have that's, you know, beyond the career of, you know, being a life coach, a goal coach is, you know, in your personal life, how do you separate that from, you know, your role as a wife or a girlfriend? Because I'm not saying that you would be bossy, but, you know, how do you like separate yourself from that and let sometimes a guy be either the goal coach or is that complicated? I'm seeing some faces in here.
No, I'm just peeing in my pants. I think that every woman here is a boss. So yeah, it's in my personal life. There's two men in my life that I constantly boss around and they hate it. Yeah, it's hard to separate coaching. You want to coach everyone you love. It's an innate feeling. I feel like I want to help the people that I love most. But sometimes my son and my boyfriend will look at me and say, coach, I give up. And it is hard, specifically when you come out of an Athleta or a seminar or a webinar or even just a one-on-one coaching session, and you're still a coach and you got to throw off the hat and be a girlfriend. I mean, there's one place that I'm definitely never the coach.
Oh.
Yeah, that place. Oh. Go, Vanessa, how you go.
I find it so easy in my relationship. I don't even find the struggle. And I think it's two things. Like, yes, I'm a strong leader. But, you know, when they look at leaders, they actually notice if you're in a group and someone else is a stronger leader, they call it valency. It's like the natural chemistry of a group is that I could be a leader in one, and if I enter another group and there's someone who has a stronger tendency, they'll step up and I'll sit down. It's not on purpose. It's like they could see it across group dynamics everywhere. I have a strong man. I just have a good, strong man, and I'm really good at being harmonious. I think even as a coach, I'm like a diplomat, you know, and that's part of my New Year's resolution was to get more Magda style so I could just be more up in it. But it's like there's a way that I think a lot of the coaching that I do is, yes, I am a strong leader and I will give very strong opinions. I will tell my clients what I suggest. And I think a lot of my tactic is to help them figure out their own inner wisdom. And I think that's what I do with my clients the most is, I mean, I'm sorry, my lovers.
Your
my
lovers?
Husband now, well, I've done it in the past too.
Okay.
But like I think what they say is hard about me is that I hold people very accountable for themselves. I demand self-awareness. I demand that you work on your things. I demand that you evolve. That's just natural. It's implicit. But once I have a partner who's on board for that and they're present and they're healthy and they're engaged, I have no problem just like sitting back and like letting them do their thing.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching you guys on Sunday and I mean, you had constant eye contact and he was helping you out without, you know, he was there. You could feel his presence. He was with
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
It's funny because when I walked in the room, I didn't know you were married, first of all.
Yeah, I don't wear a
ring. Then, and then I was like, okay, there's something here. I was like, maybe it's her boyfriend. And then you told me this is my husband. I was like, okay, that makes sense. And stuff was going on. And it was a pretty magical goal coaching session because you guys had something going on with your house and you were putting a bid on a house. And during that session, like... they got a house.
It
and
was so accepted.
It was like really was awesome.
Right there.
We crushed a goal right there.
But he was, but dude, he was like owning it. Like we were in the middle and he like gets up. He's like, no, we put a bid on a house. And he was like, he had it, you know, yeah. And then came back and he was super calm about it. I'm like, these two are like amazing.
It's like MC Yogi. I mean, the way he's Mario supported her from the moment he walked in was beautiful. But, you know, I was at that Yoga Athleta thing this weekend, and MC Yogi was talking about his wife.
Yogart.
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 That's funny.
When did I say Yoga Athleta? That's because of Kat. That's because of Kat. Yeah. You see? I channel Kat. Yeah. It's your fault, Kat. Everything's your fault. He started to talk about her and the way she's doing the 10,000 Buddhas and her, she has some sort of illness or something. And the way he spoke about holding her paint cans up, I fell in love. I fell in love. The support that he has for his spouse is beautiful. Just like what Mario did for you. It's beautiful.
Well, you're all strong women. Like, what do you think? Like, to me, I used to have a friend who would say she saw a statue and it was like the man was kind of holding the woman as she was like flying kind of. And she used to say like a man needs to be a strong anchor because women are like mercurial. Like we're going to every realm of existence and every feeling. And when we feel grounded by like a strong presence, whether it's a man or a woman, you know, it doesn't matter. But when we feel grounded by a strong presence, we have more freedom to kind of go to the depths and the heights. And you know, I always liked that idea. And I don't know if that, well, I'm curious what you all think about it.
Yeah, I was like reaching for the microphone. Vanessa and I are sharing a microphone. I was like, ooh. I have a lot of thoughts on this. I blog about this actually really frequently because my experience in my relationship is Magda, usually I'm like you, particularly yangy. And like, I am doing this and no one's going to stop me. And that is how I operate. And I like to be in control. And really, over the past like year or so, I've been in exploration with Mike, my husband, about me stepping more into my feminine, which allows him to be more in his masculine. And it's so much more harmonious, you know, and it's been a challenge for me to be more yin. And yet it feels more comfortable when I'm in it. I don't feel as much struggle, you know, and then it allows him to be more holding my paint cans for me, you know, instead of me being like, no, I can hold my fucking paint cans, you know, which is how I would normally operate.
Yeah, give me my paint cans.
Right, right, yeah. Right. And I don't have to hold the paint cans all
no,
the time.
Don't. No, you don't.
So it feels good. And it's something that for a long time I had to almost train myself to do. And now it feels a lot more natural.
I like Mike. More.
And you know what? Guys like no, that. They love the do. Tomboy. They like the strong girl, but they still love like that softness, you know,
the always. Girl, the feminine.
Yeah, yeah. They love that.
Well, and it's harmony. So whether you're two gay guys, two lesbians, like a hetero couple, there's this harmony that happens, I think, when we're breathing. We inhale, we exhale, right? So we receive, we give. We receive, we give. And I think that a lot of what can happen out of balance is like, let's say you're a coach, you're a yogi, you're a caretaker, and you're used to being in charge, you're used to giving. And it could feel really, I know for me, it always felt more vulnerable and uncomfortable receiving. It brought up all these ideas like I'm dependent and I'm my mom and like, you know, all of these kinds of vulnerabilities. And so, you know, when I sit down and I let four people massage me in a women's group, I am uncomfortable. I cannot wait to be the one doing the massage myself. And I think for all of us in every relationship, we're looking inside of ourselves and in the relationship itself to see, are we breathing? Are we giving and receiving? Are we giving and receiving? I think a lot of us are blocked on receptivity.
Yeah. Is it equitable? Is it?
Well, and that starts to kind of marry into your sexuality and how you give and you take and, you know.
We are the receiver.
Exactly.
I beg to differ.
Well, no, it's just more realistic. Like when we get into that posture where we think we're giving, we're doing, we're leading, we're coaching, we're teaching. Like when we get into that posture as if that's the entirety and we don't recognize that we're always receiving and we can't help it but be that, then it's just, it's a delusion actually. And it can create problematic dynamics because then like Amy, like you were just saying, you know, if you get into that stance, then your partner starts to become more passive because you won't let them show up. And then inevitably, because we're humans, we're like, why the fuck aren't they showing up? I feel so alone. But it's like we created or at least we enabled the dynamic to happen. So I think it's just cool for all of us to look at where are we on that spectrum of giving. Are we comfortable with that? Because some people are fucking stingy. And where are we on the spectrum of receiving? Because that one, I think, is the more subtle, insidious one.
Well, Amy, even when she was describing her relationship and the experience of giving up a little bit of that, her shoulders relaxed and she looked relieved. So she's experiencing a good feeling by giving up to her man who likes my shoes, by the way. He loved my Jordans. He's cool.
I think maybe you inspired him, because actually the other day he asked me how I would feel if he got Jordans. So
tell him he jumps. That's higher. Awesome. They're so cool. They're so cool. They're coming out December 20th.
What are we talking about, Mike?
The Jordan. Yeah. Oh. The Jordan 11s, all white, are coming out December 20th. But because I have a hookup, I have them at home.
So wait, here's a question. I have a question, because we're all in a room with very strong women who we have the tendency to kind of escalate to that, you know, moment of power. And once we get there, that happens to me. Once I get there, I'm like blind. I'm just like on fire. How do we keep ourselves in check? How, like, because it's really hard to get up there and then they're looking at you from down there. Hey, look at me.
Wait, hold on. Explain for me. When you say get up to this moment of power, what do you mean?
When we start kind of losing that feminine side, when we start getting really strong.
So you're stepping into the masculine.
When we start claiming again our independence, because it's, for me, it happens gradually. And then I'm like up there on that high horse and somebody kind of like waves me down. I'm like, oh, okay, you're right. And then I come back down. But if we don't have a partner, or if you're not in a relationship, how do you keep yourself in check? Like, that's like a big one for me.
I love this question. I actually think about it all the time as bowling without bumpers. You know, like, you don't have anybody to keep your ball in the lane. When you're in a relationship, you have, you know, when you're younger and you bowled and you had those bumpers to mm-hmm. keep your ball in the center.
Guidance.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, I think giving presents, Amy, is a good way to keep yourself in check, like Kat says, which I don't know about keeping in check, because if you have scratched and climbed and worked and achieved, you should enjoy and revel the final destination to its maximum potential, because you did it. But I think gratitude is really, for me, the answer that I always use to keep humble. It doesn't matter what my accomplishment is. I thank everyone around me and every element around me on a daily basis, and that keeps me humble no matter what. No matter where I'm at. Yeah, I bit that nail really bad. You know, so it doesn't matter what the power level is in my life, gratitude always keeps me humble. Always.
Yeah, I like that answer. And I think, like, as I was just trying to think about it as you guys were talking, I was thinking about two elements seem to happen. It's like it could be like a defense mechanism, an egoic pattern. Like, we're building up and we feel invulnerable. We're on top of the world and we can get into a certain state of being. And sometimes it's more like an energetic pattern. Like, we've just been kind of burning, pushing. And then we're just in that nervous system. And so I think that practices that calm your nervous system so that you could be yin and yang. You know, I was saying to Magda the other day that mostly, like, people who have like a yang personality, they want to do power yoga and they want to go running. And like, what they often need to create homeostasis is yin. They need to stretch and they need to meditate, but they hate it. And people like me who are so yin, like, I just want to stretch, feel so good. And like, I don't want to go out and go for a run, but that's what I need for balance. So I think you can look at your nervous system level and say, you know, am I balancing these things out so that I can come back? And then I also think it's important to recognize that we are malleable. Like, I could be on fire and I really 2 seconds later can walk out and be like sweet and harmonized with my honey. Because I think we have to start to recognize that the idea that we're stuck in a state is a role, and it's actually wrong. We're very malleable beings. And so I think practices around that, like exploring our ideas of who we are, exploring our roles, because we may have a certain identity that we're hooked on. And then also recognizing, like, there is no problem with being on fire and then 2 minutes later being soft and yin. You can shift like that.
It's interesting what she's saying, because in this room, all four of us, I mean, Amy is probably the only entrepreneur I have not experienced, which I'm going to go next week with Darren, I promise. We're all public figures to a certain extent here. We belong to the public, maybe an hour a day or 5 hours a day. In our case, probably 12 hours a day. That's not who we are. That's what our job is. And that's not what defines us. So when you are in a position of power, when you achieve that, I mean, when Kat was on the Lincoln Road parking lot and there was 1,000 people there looking at that little body, I was impressed with she was at, on a summit. She was up there, and she was humble. When she left, I'm sure she was sitting, having a coffee, reading a book with her dog, because that's who she is. Yes, she's up there. That's her job. But that doesn't identify who she is. And as long as we have a good core support group, a family, a husband, a loving environment, you can never really forget who you are, no matter how powerful you are. And I can't wait to see you in Times Square. I'll be there.
I like Ram Dass used to say something about how, like, you know, we have to engage in these roles in life, right? Like, we have to show up. And right now we're in a certain role, and you have to be a life coach or a yoga teacher. And that's cool, because that's what we have to do in this material plane of existence in order to get by. And we don't confuse that with who we are. We don't confuse that. So we know we can always be malleable, and I could be mother one minute, and I could be lover one minute, and I could be coach, and then I can be, you know, sweetheart. And I think it's cool for us to recognize, especially as women, I think we are so like multidimensional. That's that right. We can be in every aspect of that spectrum, and like, shit, we can go from that like hour to hour, minute to minute. So I think it's cool for us to recognize, like, we're not the game. We're not the player, even. We're so much more than that, but there's no reason not to play the game.
Exactly.
The hue in human means multidimensional. And not only are we human, we're women. We give birth, for God's sakes. I mean, that makes us like dough. We can change in 2 seconds, no matter how powerful you are. We are malleable.
And full of layers.
Oh, I love peeling those layers.
And textures.
I love it.
So here's how I keep myself in check. I have a pink lipstick. And I pull it out and I put pink lipstick. I have a collection of pink lipsticks. You didn't know this about me.
Wait, and then what does that do that makes you feel
I don't know. It kind of brings me back to being girly, and I feel pretty.
I mean, that's actually genius if that works, because you know, when you look at like behavioral change, it's like you try to find the simplest thing someone can do to create a big impact. So I used to feel good. Like if I felt down on myself, I felt like bad about who I was, I used to put red lipstick on when I was in college. That gave me the same boost. I was like, look, I look like I showered.
Like
I look fresh.
Lipstick. Yeah.
Feeling good. So, I mean, that's actually a pretty huge idea if it works for you. Yeah.
So lipstick wearing.
Pink lipstick. Yeah.
I want to ask about peeling the layers back. What is a goal coaching or a life coaching session with either of you feel like, or like, what can you walk us through, you know, what people would expect?
I'm going to let beauty go before age. Go ahead, Vanessa.
So much easier to answer after someone else has. So I've been riding that one this whole this whole session. You know, I don't know. As we're having this conversation, I'm starting to think, like, what the fuck do I do? It's definitely different. You know, I have people doing a lot of breathing into their bodies, I have to say, and feeling into their heart and like priming their intuition and just seeing like how things sit in their gut. Because, you know, the interesting thing is a lot of times when I see people, sometimes they have a clear goal, right? And they want to get there. And that's one version. Sometimes all they know is something's missing and they don't even know exactly where they want to go. And so what they find with decision making is you can weigh out all your options. Like someone will be thinking, should I quit my job and go to school, or shouldn't I? If you try to use your cognitive brain, you can weigh this out all day long. You can write lists, and nothing gives you the indication to jump. Because I could have 10 things on the con list and one thing on the pro, but if that one thing on the pro is viscerally important to me, I'll jump. I should jump. So a lot of what I find I do with people is, of course, they're talking and I'm listening and all of that kind of stuff. And then I'm having them slow down into like what that feels like and what that brings up for them and what kind of images they have. Because I think for a lot of us, the answer is that we've become over-rationalized, like over-thinkers, over-worriers, over-planners. And what we've lost because we've been conditioned and domesticated and, you know, told we're wrong, or, you know, all of these different things in our lives, is we've lost that connection deep into our gut and into our heart and into our body and spirit, where we just have the answers and we're more playful and we go and experiment. And so I think that's kind of what I do. I think we set goals, yes, but I think a lot of the kind of angle I'm coming from is helping people reconnect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think connecting is a great part of what we do. What I do that's different than what Vanessa's saying is, the breathing is important, and I always like mimic Kat because she's like the guru of breathing, the victorious breath, remember? What I do is, and it's hard for you and me, Amy, what I do, I stick my tongue to the roof of my mouth a lot, and I don't talk, and I actively listen. And in a, first of all, I have like a dating session with a client, a potential client, to see if we trust each other, almost like a date, like if you like the guy. And then we engage formally with a contract. Then we begin our journey. And what I do is I listen. And in their sessions, what usually happens is that they reveal their own answers, their own solutions. I never advise. I usually end up with a new friend, which I don't encourage. But success after a period of time, and it's a crutch. It's a period of time. It's not a forever engagement, because then I'm not doing my job. You know, they're supposed to meet their goal and bye, good luck, independence. But yeah, self-revelation is what I'm going after. And sometimes, like Vanessa says, they don't even know what the problem is. They don't know what the obstacle is. And in their own sessions, they discover it. And that's what I do. I help them do that.
What Vanessa was saying, it's funny because somebody sent me a quote this morning, and it's, happiness in intelligent people is the rarest thing I know, and that's by Hemingway. Ooh, it's like, you overthink shit.
Yeah.
It's like, sometimes, like, wear the pink lipstick and just kind of, huh? No, that's well, what I try to do, because I'm like, I overthink shit.
They have this crazy term in psychology. I actually think it's probably neuropsychology. They call it cognitive smothering. Ooh. So what it means is that your brain actually begins to smother the impulses that come from your heart to your brain and from your body to your brain. Because we often think like the brain controls everything, which is like this top down approach. But actually, it's a bottom up approach where your body signals to the brain. So I'm like, that's some crazy shit. I cognitive smothered like crazy, because it feels safer to think. Like, we think as long as we can understand something or we can play out all the angles, that we'll be okay. And I think we're trained to kind of leave the world of our feelings. I mean, I don't know about you people, but I had one of those dads who said, I'll give you something to cry about. Like, stop crying now.
Oh.
And you know, that shit, you learn real fast to like suck up the tears and like bite it, right? So there wasn't a lot of emotional expression in my family. So you start to get used to retreating into the world of your mind to try to explain things. And you kind of run from the feeling domain of your body. But in that same regard, that's where your instinct lies. That's where your primal self lies. That's where your intuition lies. And I think that's actually how a lot of us get into problems.
Well, I think trusting your body, your instinct, is an art too.
Yeah.
People ignore their body, and they
right.
shouldn't, because the body doesn't lie.
No, that's right.
The mind plays some dirty tricks on us.
Yeah.
The body, though, it's always on the up and up.
That's right. Your body holds all of that unconscious
wisdom. Yeah, that's why there's like, when we teach, and I think Amy and I have kind of, I think we both kind of share the same idea. There's a big difference in doing a pose and feeling a pose. Completely different.
You should have seen me at that yogurt trying to do that pose.
Doing that pose. So everything that's going on is reminding me, I have a little tune for you guys. I've got like the crazy, no? Play it. Yeah, we'll play it at the end. All right, cool. So we've got some events coming up. Let's see, I've got that here. So we've got Flourish at the Palms today, and that starts at what, at 6 p.m.? 6:30, yep. And there's parking. How does that work? Is that, there's valet parking. I think it's included, right?
Yeah, if you go to brownpaperticket.com, which is a super cool fair trade ticket company, for those of you who are interested in hosting events and putting tickets on the internet. They offer a discounted valet, or there's a parking lot right across the street by Broken Shaker that you can park in that's hourly. So $35, yoga followed by a garden to table dinner. I don't know what the menu is yet, but Julie, the chef, sent me a picture of all these freshly picked greens from their organic garden. So really excited to see what they come up with. Yeah. So that's tonight, 6:30. Come flow with me.
I'm not going to eat until tonight.
Yeah, it's buffet, so you can eat a lot.
So you prep the vessel with yoga, and then you fill it up with good grub, craft grub. We've got Freedom Flow Project tonight at Riviera Park in Coral Gables, and that's free, $99, and that's my project, so dear to my heart. Shoes for Street Yoga class, and that's at Dharma Yoga Studio with Ixta Bliss Fit and Pablo Lucero at Dharma Yoga Studio, 7:45 p.m. this Thursday. Friday night, the regular H2OM, and that's going to be with Crystal Gold. She's awesome. She does all this like glow in the dark, super awesome stuff. Super cool. And that's 8 p.m. as usual at the H2OM at the Standard Miami. We also have an Ashtanga weekend with Minar. And I just found out that Minar is going to be teaching at Trio Yoga down the street.
Who's Minar?
He's like a master of Ashtanga. He's amazing. Really cool guy. And it goes December 13th through December 14th at Isha Yoga Shala. And then there's an acro yoga workshop for the South Miamians at Just Om Yoga Studio Saturday at 2 p.m. That's what I got.
Yeah. And then also we've got live at Unity on the Bay. Chira Cassell told us about this event Friday night at 7:30 to 10. Simrit is going to be performing some sacred music, and it benefits yoga for youth. So that's going to be really cool. It's $25 online, $30 at the door. Unity on the Bay. It's right off Biscayne. Yeah, you can get tickets online, brightstarevents.com, and the Sacred Space is involved, and I always love to support them and what they're up to in Miami, so
yeah,
check
great.
It out. Yeah, and then any last parting thoughts from Vanessa and Magda?
Thank you both for having us on. Happy holidays. iTunes, Magda Lopez, go.
I would say the same thing. VanessaScotto.com.
Do
go.
It.
And
do
let's
it.
Let's crush our goals in 2015,
let's kill
ladies.
Em. Let's kill
set the kill it here.
Let's kill it.
Are you guys gonna be doing anything else together?
You know, I'm really liking this collaboration. I really am.
I'm loving it. I feel the love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send us some requests, you
we
know.
Should,
let's
we
see
take
what's
this show
going
on.
We may, we may take this yin yang act on the road. I have something coming up at the Standard in January, so just check
we'll
us out.
We'll be talking about it for sure.
Thanks,
we
everybody.
Will be
so great
about it.
Being
happy
here.
Holidays.
I always love being with you all.
All right. So we're going to Om our regular Om, and then we're going to leave you with Jungle by Emma and Louise. Inhale. See you next week, Omi.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy.
Talk to you next time. Thank you, Magda and Vanessa. Bye. Ciao.
All right. Love you guys. Thank you.
In the dark room, we fight. Make up for our love. I've been thinking, thinking about you, about us. And we're moving slow. Our hearts beat so fast. I've been dreaming, dreaming about you, about us. Hey, 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 hey. My head is a jungle, jungle. My head is a jungle, jungle.
Did you like me? Did you hate me? Tell me why. You can find me at www.atrev-t.com. That means to dare. I dare you to contact me. My phone number is 305-903-7160. I'm on Instagram, R-E-V-E-T-E. I'm on Facebook, A-T-R-E-V-E-T-E, Inc., I'm incorporated. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. Contact me.